Raul Castro leaves office this week after two terms as president of Cuba. He took power from his brother Fidel 12 years ago. Now, for the first time since the island's communist revolution in 1959, Cuba will not be run by a Castro. And the Castro family is leaving an uncertain legacy. Jorge Duany is head of the Cuban Research Institute at Florida International University in Miami. Jorge, how big a moment is this for Cuba?
From some purposes, it's a very important moment. It's the first time that there isn't a Castro heading the Cuban government. On the other hand, it appears that it's not going to be a watershed because Raul Castro, the current president, will stay behind the throne, so to speak. He will still be the head of the Communist Party in Cuba, as well as the chief of the armed forces. And finally, he's been elected as a deputy in the National Assembly, which is the equivalent of Congress in Cuba.
So the man in front will be, or at least we expect it to be, his number two man, Miguel Díaz-Canel. We should say this is not a democratic process at all by which he becomes president. What can you tell us about him or Díaz-Canel with Castro right behind the scene?
Actually, one of the main virtues, if you will, of Miguel Díaz-Canel is that he's been having a very low profile since he was named vice president by the current president, Raul Castro. So he's been relatively reserved and discreet in his public pronouncements. He hasn't made any big public speeches like Fidel used to do. And only last year, we heard from him in a video that was leaked to the press that he's going to preserve the main party line in Cuba. And of course, that's necessary for him to be selected president. So we really don't know if he's going to be a Gorbachev type reformer or even a liberal, or perhaps more likely if he's just going to follow in the footsteps of his previous president.
Well, Raul Castro did not completely fall in his big brother's footsteps, Fidel's footsteps, during his two terms as president. He was known for his early attempt to transform the economy, allowing some private enterprise, economic liberalization. That was in 2011, although he pulled back on that in recent years. Did Raul Castro bring Cuba any closer to becoming a capitalist country, which was the fear of some of his detractors?
Not really. I mean, Raul always insisted that he was merely updating socialism in Cuba, meaning that he was going to do whatever was necessary for the socialist system to survive. So, in fact, what we do have is sort of a mixed economy in which central planning or state-run enterprises are still a dominant aspect of the economy. And then there's a smaller sector of the economy that's not controlled by the government, and that largely has to do with the so-called self-employed workers, or cuentapropistas in Spanish. And of course, there's also a number of mixed capitalist and socialist enterprises. And finally, there's a whole sector of cooperatives in Cuba.
So the people who could, for instance, start up restaurants in their homes or kind of a small B&B in their homes, are they still allowed to do that now?
They are until at least last year when the government decided not to issue any more licenses for this kind of employment.
Why did it stop that?
Well, there was an earlier Congress in Cuba of the Communist Party in which members of the party expressed a concern with a growing enrichment of these private entrepreneurs and the growing inequality in income distribution. So it looks like the government was actually very concerned about these sort of outbursts of capitalism in a country that's supposed to be equal for all.
So what's the state of the Cuban economy now?
Right now, most of the economy is still controlled by the government, especially in areas like health or education, which are really not open to investment. But many other sectors of the economy are open to the international business community. And in fact, the Cuban government has been trying to lure millions and millions of dollars, especially in the free enterprise zone of Mariel. However, those efforts have not been productive until now.
Why not?
I think the bureaucracy is still too complicated, and many investors don't feel safe investing in Cuba. But most of it is Chinese, Russian, Brazilian, and anything but U.S. For Cubans themselves, I think the last couple of years have meant an increase in the expectations that things will improve in the near future. Most people barely survive on a $20 or $25 salary. There's an aging population as well that barely meets ends with their pension funds and so on. But clearly the current moment in which the island is found, particularly with the U.S.-Cuba tension and the collapse of the Venezuelan economic and political system, that doesn't bode well for the Cuban future.
As Raul Castro prepares to leave, what is his legacy and the larger legacy of the Castro brothers?
I think at this time it's hard to assess the legacy of the Castro brothers, but certainly in the case of Raul, there were some significant improvements in the economic performance of the island, especially the opening up to the market and to more efficient systems of economic administration. On the other hand, on the political side, there was very little that Raul actually led in terms of, for instance, allowing multiple parties in Cuba or, taking care of a human rights situation on the island, which is not it's one of the worst, according to international organizations, and simply allowing freedom of expression and tolerance for different political opinions. I think on those counts, the legacy of Raul and in the long term of Fidel is very poor.
Okay, thank you. Jorge Duany, head of the Cuba Research Institute at Florida International University. Nice to speak with you.
Thank you.